Chapter 66 Trees of Stone. Mirel, Cadean, Mina, Jen, Udan, Volney, and Gerund stood on a sea of black sand. Sulphurous vapours wafted by on the wind, puckering faces. A constant layer of low-flying clouds sped by above, the light dim and uneven. The sun thrusting through at unpredictable intervals and disappearing just as unexpectedly. Small leathery plants poked up from the sand, providing the only vegetation for a wasted terrain. Sharp, porous rocks rose up in crumbling heaps in every direction, and no vista provided a fairer prospect than another. And despite the season, the air was stifling, dry, and hot, and the combination of the sickening smell and the heat engendered a general malaise in every mind and stomach. Volney exhaled sharply after a period of aimless and disappointed wandering around. Eldaloth obviously hid the portal to this place out of mercy for his creatures. Leave it to our luck to escape to a place less desirable than a dungeon. First a wagon, then a sewer, then a dungeon, and now a desert, and not just any desert, a rotten, foul, reeking stinkhole of a desert. And if we escape this place, no doubt we'll find ourselves on the Uyumark latrine shard, and forced to wipe their scaly, believe it or not, Udan cut in loudly, in an attempt to head Volney off. There are shards worse than this one. Jen knows about one of them. It's so cold your face falls right off after a few moments. You know, Volney ranted, I'll never understand why it is that other people try to make you feel at peace with your situation by telling you there's a worse one. Is that supposed to make me feel better? It's like stabbing me in the leg, twisting the blade around, and then telling me I should be grateful it's not in my eye. For Erelinda's sake, can someone conjure me up a warm bed and a decent meal? It's been so long.
Gerund crossed to his friend and put his arm around his shoulders.
We all feel the same, Volney. Udan was merely pointing out that we at least have a chance to survive here. Have faith, friend. Better sand than snow.
I am sorry, Jen apologised to everyone after letting the red fade from Volney's cheeks. I wish there had been time to prepare or some other path we could have followed.
Mirel latched onto his arm as if preparing for a summer stroll in a pleasant garden.
We all had the choice, Jen. You didn't force anyone here. What do we do now?
Shelter first, then I'll scout around for signs of food or water. We need to find protection from the sun and the wind. These pitted black rocks should hold a myriad of caves we can avail ourselves of if we can find an outcropping big enough. We'll go slowly. Try not to exert yourselves overmuch.
For the next 2 hours they wandered about in the dreary wasteland. Seething pools of boiling mud radiated a foul smell, and they steered clear of them when they could. The pools increased in size and frequency the further they pressed on, and Jen finally called for them to reverse course, Volney murmuring under his breath. The rest bore up well, but as darkness started to fall without their finding any outcropping of significant size, they had to settle for the lee side of a rounded hump of a boulder that had a smoother, solider aspect than the jagged black ones they had searched during the day. Wind had scooped out a small bowl around it, and they descended the slight incline and sat heavily against the stone in complete exhaustion, all except Mina, who knelt by Gerund.
"Is there any comfort I can give you, milord?" Mina offered.
Gerund's face contorted in surprise.
"What?"
"I could rub your shoulders or your feet, or you could lay your head on my lap for comfort while you rest. I could sing you something to take your mind off of a difficult day."
"No,"
Gerund declined, fumbling to sort his thoughts and feelings out.
"No, I mean, thank you, but no."
"I'll take any of those, Mina," Udan said hopefully. "My feet are killing me."
Volney laughed.
"That won't do, Udan. She is his wife."
"You two are married?"
Udan asked incredulously.
"Since when?
Torbrand let you marry his daughter? How in all of Keyhole did you manage?"
"Shh,"
Volney warned him.
"We don't talk about it."
"No, really, I must hear that..."
Jen shook his head, and Udan let the subject drop. Mina, disappointed, rose to go.
"I apologize," Gerund blurted out quickly, "if I've offended you, Mina. I don't wish you to think that anything you have to offer me is somehow undesirable. Rather, that in circumstances such as these, it would be ungentlemanly of me to accept comfort when it should be my place to provide it. If there is something I can do for you to ease your burden, then name it."
She returned to his side.
Then let me serve you. Please, let me stand by your side. I know my father bequeathing me to you was a deep insult to your honour and to your nation. I can't imagine how much I must disgust you, or what loves or friends you lost when I was thrust upon you. I cannot undo what is done, but at least give me the chance to show you my worth. I will not hope that you can love me as I do you, but if anything I can do will blunt the bitterness in your eyes every time you look at me. Let me perform it."
Awkwardness pervaded the party as they witnessed this private moment. Mina's heartfelt intensity momentarily distracting them from hunger, thirst, and fatigue. Gerund, stunned to silence by this sudden vehemence, regarded his estranged bride and took her hand tenderly, signalling for her to sit by her side.
"Mina, what was done to us was wrong."
"I know, but
listen for a moment. I will not use you or have you serve me like a slave."
"I don't want to be your slave."
"Please, let me finish. I cannot love or even like someone I do not know, and I cannot trust your regard for me until I am sure you know me, and not just some ideal you may have conjured up of Tolnorian nobility. I have faults enough to sour any good woman's opinion. The best I can offer you, and all I can accept from you now, is your company and your conversation. Let us plant that seed and see what grows."
"Bloody well said," Udan interjected inappropriately, "though you're a fool to turn down the foot rub." Gerund shot an angry look at Udan before turning back to Mina, who smiled gratefully at her husband.
"Thank you for your concession. I will make the most of it."
She put her hand on Gerund's bearded cheek and kissed him lightly on the lips, before settling in next to him. Gerund's face couldn't quite settle on an emotion, though he offered no protest at Mina having taken a little more liberty than they had agreed upon.
"Can I speak with you privately for a moment, Jen?"
Mirel requested.
"Certainly."
The others watched as the two disappeared around the rock and walked out into a stiff wind, Jen reflexively assuring Cadean that he would keep Mirel safe. The clouds had cleared up, allowing a chill to goosebump Mirel's arms. The shards intermixed with the stars, coalescing into even bands, evidencing their gradual journey toward the day of unification. Triss now waxed half full. Mirel led Jen toward a smaller boulder nearby before addressing him in low tones.
"Did Aethon's plan work? Is Shirtan alive?"
"He is. I did it myself."
Mirel shook her head in acceptance and paced in a slow turn, thinking,
"I had no qualms with Shirtan dead, and I doubt you did either. While it complicated the prophecy, I was happy that the Shalane was free."
"The Shalane made me swear to do it, or I would have declined.
No doubt Aethon hung you over her head as leverage."
It was Jen's turn to pace, running his hands through his hair.
"Nothing I have done since Elder Luri Mora has felt right. Now I've led everyone to this cursed place. We'll die here if we don't find water soon."
"I've learned a bit about faith lately, Jen," Mirel said. "Maybe it's time you rely on that. How are you going to explain to everyone that Shirtan is alive?"
"How can I without exposing myself?
You need only say that the Shalane told you that the church managed to resurrect him somehow. That is all that need be said. As for our escape, your fighting prowess will suffice as explanation."
A shout from Cadean sent the two sprinting back to the boulder, where they found everyone standing and staring into the darkness. On a hill to the east, a single figure, shrouded and unknowable, stood perfectly still. Tendrils of thin fabric from its cloak whipped in the wind, the immobility of the apparition suggesting a statue beneath the clothing. Jen raised his arms in a placating gesture and took a step forward, but a sudden wind kicked up dust and sand, and when it had passed, the phantom had gone.
"Haunting," Udan said.
"But it is a good sign for us," Jen offered, voice hopeful. "Someone is on this shard and has survived here. I'm going to go look around."
Jen searched for signs of civilization until midnight, but found nothing promising. The next day bloomed as hot and miserable as the last. The farther they travelled east, the fewer outcroppings of stone they encountered. The dunes piled higher, and the black sand intermingled with a fine dust that clung to their teeth and lips and settled in their ears and boots. Near mid-afternoon, Mina abruptly stumbled and fell face first to the ground. Everyone gathered around the stricken woman quickly, Gerund pulling her over onto his lap and wiping her sweating face with the inside of his cloak.
I'm glad she fell first, Udan panted. I won't be far behind.
Jen, sick with worry, turned toward them.
We shouldn't travel during the day. After our encounter last night, I had hoped we would find signs of civilization by now. Everyone stay here and rest. I'll try to find somewhere for us to hole up.
After an hour of searching, Jen found a dry riverbed running north and south, providing some shade against the punitive sun. By the time he had collected everyone and marched them there, both Mirel and Udan needed support, and Jaren sweated profusely as he practically carried Mina down the sharp incline and into the shade.
"Is anyone hiding any food?" Volney petitioned. "My cloak is starting to smell like roast pork for some reason."
I'm afraid the prison guards neglected to portion out enough porridge to us to stuff any in our pockets before we left, Udan answered. Remember? You were there.
Volney beat the back of his head against the rock before resting the front on his knees and dozing off in the sweltering heat. The rest of the party followed suit, save Jen, who regarded them with sadness. He couldn't let it end this way if he could help it. While he couldn't conjure up food without suspicion, water, he thought, he could manage. As evening came on, he left the others behind and scouted out a small cave worn out of the side of the riverbed wall. It was dark, low, and dusty, and he hoped that no one in the party had enough lore to tell that water had not graced the small chamber in decades. He rested for a moment in the cooling air, for despite his conditioning, the exertion and worry wore upon him more than he let on. At last he straightened and knelt, placing his hands on the spot. Digging deep, he pulled in every ounce of power he could and willed the rock to transform into water. As he finished, his head spun with weakness and his limbs refused his command. He toppled over into the pool that he had created, helplessly bobbing face down on the surface. His exhausted mind screamed danger, but nothing could motivate his muscles to move. Dimly, he enjoyed the cool caress of the water and its feel upon his sunburned face. The woozy calm of fading consciousness and undulating caress of the water felt more like home than any place had for months. The sheltered riverbed protected Jen's footprints and allowed Cadean to find them easily, even in the fading light. He warned the rest of the party to stay clear of them as they proceeded worriedly, calling out the lost protector's name. They had not gone far when they encountered the low cave and the pool of water, and only Cadean and Mirel waited to satiate their thirst as they cast around for more clues of Jen's whereabouts.
"The trail leads to the water and no further," Cadean reported, as he and Mirel took their turn to drink amid the grateful tones of their companions. "Look at the shape of this pool," Cadean continued. "It is regular, more like a carved cistern, perhaps fed by an underground spring. The water is very clean."
Mirel pulled everyone together, face thoughtful and lined with worry.
"We cannot continue to search tonight, but we must be careful at this place. The pool here is not natural, and since this is the only water we have found, it is likely that whoever lives here knows about it. My guess is that Jen encountered the owners of this well. Whether he speaks with them now or was killed or taken captive, I cannot guess. We have but two swords now, and we keep watch. There is enough water here for days, but we must find food or perish."
"There is no need for worry,"
a strangely accented but beautiful voice from the outcropping above them startled them all. The robed figure they had seen the night before stood above them. The grey cloak enclosed her completely, only a hint of her face visible in the late evening. Long pieces of diaphanous cloth sewn into the sleeves and sides of the cloak fluttered about in the breeze. She held a small sack in one hand. Everyone's eyes shot wide as she stepped off the outcropping with easy grace and dropped 15 feet to the riverbed, landing softly. Everyone regarded their guest with wonder as she lowered her hood, her elven face and glorious dark hair stunning them with their majesty. Her cool blue eyes were tinged with sadness and reflected an innate pride as she crossed to Mirel.
"Eat,"
she commanded, placing a ripe peach in Mirel's hand and then continuing on to the rest.
"I have only one for each of you, but there are certainly more to be had. Eat first, questions later. I am Alejandra."
"I am Mirel,"
Alejandra interjected. "I know your names. Your reckless companion provided me with those."
Then Jen found you?
Rather the reverse,
Alhandra smirked, an odd expression for a face such as hers.
He is safe and in good condition. Many of my people would have left you out here to perish, despite his information. But I have always had a weakness for the race of men, and he provided me the best news that I have had in centuries. You find me magnanimous, and thus you will not die here in the waste.
What did he tell you? Mirel asked, licking the juice off her lips.
That my daughter yet lives. You know her by her human name, Maywan.
Mirel's eyes widened and her lips parted to say something, but Alhandra continued.
There are some other pieces of information about himself, the Shalane, and the Ha'ulric that my master, Devlis, would speak with you about in private. We journey tonight. We shall commence when you are ready.
They ate with delight, juice dripping through their fingers and down their chins, the peaches unusually sweet, almost decadent. The unexpected delicacy filled them, weary limbs forgetting their exhaustion. Alhandra watched them stoically, their delighted reactions bringing her no pleasure or surprise, even their rather inelegant attempts to suck the juice off their sticky fingers. Shortly, Mirel thanked her and signalled their readiness to travel. Alhandra nodded and walked forward at a steady pace, not looking back to monitor their progress or engage them in conversation. While her cold manner troubled them, if she could provide more food and somewhere better to rest, no one would feel compelled to complain about her manners. She led them down the dry riverbed, the night again clear and cold. After a 2-hour march, the charred edge approached. Alhandra did not deviate, striding up to the precipice and stopping at the brink of the empty vastness.
The stair is narrow and unprotected. If your legs are weak, wait until they recover strength before attempting them. I will go before you into Rassail and announce your coming.
With no further explanation, she stepped off the edge and turned, descending down the stairs they could not see until they stood where she had, and when they did, their heads spun. Some 200 steps had been carved into the charred edge, and, while appearing sturdy, they stretched no more than 3 feet wide with no rail between the stair and a plummet into blackness. Alhandra walked down them confidently and evenly.
I will need a moment before I try that, Udan admitted, face pale. Maybe more than a moment.
Shouldn't we tie ourselves together or something? Volney asked, voice queasy.
No, Gerund corrected. That is for travelling through snowstorms and fog. Here it would mean that if one person fell, he would drag everyone with him. We go one at a time, with several feet between us. That way when you stumble and fall, you won't take me with you.
Volney peeked over the edge and frowned, backing away.
I'll say it again. I grew up on a plane.
I'm going, Mirel announced, and before anyone, including herself, could dissuade her, she stepped off the edge and onto the stair. Cadean came after, and the rest trickled down at irregular intervals, Udan and Volney bringing up the distant rear. The stair emptied onto a platform in the middle of a broad opening, stretching nearly a quarter of a mile across the shard face, the entrance into an immense cavity in the shard's bowels. The smell of fruit and blossoms flirted with the air. Inside the cave, an orchard was bathed in soft moonlight that flooded through the hole, the occasional winks of fireflies punctuating the darkness. Beyond the orchard, the light reflected off of something that gave the impression of a field full of sparkling emerald stars. Alhandra awaited them on the platform, hands behind her back. After Volney gratefully joined the rest of the group on less treacherous ground, the austere elf spoke.
Welcome to Rassail, or in your tongue, the Grave of Light. Here you will find 52 elves and 14 dwarves. There were more of us once, but 32 elves have journeyed to Erelinda after the manner of my people, and time has claimed 38 of the dwarves that survived the shattering. Among those here is our leader, Devlis, an elf mighty in the magic arts and steeped in lore. He will speak with Mirel now and instructs me to see the rest of you quartered. Follow.
She led them off the platform and down a grassy embankment onto a stone path that led around the orchard. Just as a complaint about the darkness formed on Mirel's lips, the fireflies of the orchard grouped around them, providing a weak but ample light to tread by. The path led to a railed stair carved in dark stone that led up to a shelf, smoothed and shaped so that no crack or edge would catch a boot tip. The fireflies deserted them here, but as they walked on, the green stones they had seen sparkling in the distance flared to life, and they stopped in wonderment. Around them, massive trees rose from the rock at their feet and stretched into the air to where they supported the ceiling of the cave. While the intricate detail of the bark tricked the eye into seeing wood, a more careful examination by the light of the glowing green leaves, carved in jade crystals, revealed that the trees were indeed the work of art, and not of nature. Every detail, from root to stem, had been meticulously shaped from the dark rock, though Mirel's party found themselves hurrying by as Alejandra strode forward, unabated by their expressions of delight. As they passed, the green gem leaves winked out behind them and lit before, and in that light they caught glimpses of doorways and windows carved out of the stony tree trunks. Most yawned empty and black, but from time to time a curious dwarf or elf would stare out at them expressionlessly, faces bathed in the green light. Alejandra abruptly stopped at the entrance to one of the massive stone trees. "You will stay here tonight. When it is light, we will proportion you among the vacant trees more comfortably. Come, Mirel, Devlis waits." Mirel followed, Cadean shadowing her, as Alejandra proceeded up a small incline. The trees occluded the view of the orchard and the opening of the shard beyond, and despite the magic and awe she felt from the trees, the farther they passed into the cave, the more the city resembled the grave suggested by its name. They passed out of the main cluster of trees and into a flat, open space. One immense tree, larger and more grand than the rest, hulked 50 yards ahead. "I will retire now," Alejandra informed them. "Proceed to the tree there and enter. You are expected. I will probably see you again tomorrow. Farewell." "Thank you," Mirel said with sincere gratitude, though Alejandra didn't acknowledge it.
"A queer place,"
Cadean whispered as Mirel proceeded on tentatively.
"Wondrous, but stale," she finished for him. "Grave of light," she called it. "That is what it feels like, especially here in the dark. Just think, Cadean. These elves and dwarves have lived here for centuries with nothing but this and the harsh desert above. Hopefully Devlis is a little more forthcoming than Alejandra. I wonder how Maywin's father ever loved such a cold creature."
"She was not always so,"
a voice from behind them said, startling them out of their wits. Cadean went for his sword but could not pull it out. They faced an older elf dressed in plain black robe tied with a knotted rope. The only colour about him was a green feather pin above his left breast. A white, thin beard fell from his chin like a waterfall to his chest. His snowy hair he wore long, and above his upswept ears, absorbing green eyes stood out youthfully on a face carved rough by age.
"Relax, Master Cadean," he said. "I mean no harm. I am Devlis, whom you seek." "What have you done to my—"
The sword suddenly came loose of the scabbard.
"There,"
Devlis apologized.
"I simply did not want to find myself split in two by accident." "You elves seem to have a talent for sneaking up on people,"
Cadean complained, resheathing his sword.
"We are silent by nature and do not startle easily, so we have not developed those little habits of politely announcing ourselves by coughing or sniffing as you do. Come, I live in the tree just ahead there."
"The craftsmanship of the trees is marvellous,"
Mirel expressed, as the older elf passed by her and started toward the solitary tree at the back of the cave.
"Yes, it is a fine work," Devlis said, "but I still wonder at times if they are too real. Sometimes I find myself believing I walk in a real grove of great oaks, only to place my hand on the rocky trunk to disappoint myself over and over. Here we are."
They passed through the archway into a circular room with a polished floor of dark brown rock. He spoke a word in Elvish, and a diamond, the size of one of the peaches they had just eaten, glowed with a comforting white light. It rested on a small black metal sconce over an intricate throne hewn from the walls. Green jade ran in an arch around the back of the throne. A stairway rose off to their right, leading to rooms higher up in the trunk. The dwarves had carved seats into the wall circling away from the throne, and a circular section of the middle of the floor was raised to form a table of sorts, or perhaps a platform from which to perform or speak.
"That is a treasure indeed," Mirel commented about the diamond.
Devlis smiled and sat in on the throne.
"Here it is worth precisely nothing, save as a focus for light. I would not keep you long, for I know of your travails, and you need not feel as if you have to explain everything. Jen's mind provided more information than we have in our own limited way been able to gather over the centuries. I am gratified to know the race of men still thrives. I worked with your ancestors much during the Mikikian Wars. You are an impatient, unwise race, but the Millimeri gifted you magic and Eldaloth gifted you with many children. I suppose it natural that—
Devlis, Mirel interrupted. I mean no disrespect, but I am concerned for Jen. Where is he, and is he well?
I do apologize, Mirel. It has been so long since I have had someone new to speak with. I have always supposed your impatience born of short lives. I doubt I could tolerate waiting for anything either, if I knew death lingered a few years off. Your man is well. He is resting in a chamber above. I will send him to you tomorrow, though I do wish to speak with him more.
I thought you had all you needed from his mind already.
I don't wish to glean anything more from him. It is some wisdom I wish to impart. He is a unique creature with powerful gifts who is, nonetheless, angry with himself and not seeing clearly. If I can set him upon a more useful path, then I think I would be helping my masters, the Millimeri. And you, I should think.
Yes, thank you. And what of the elves and dwarves here? How came you here?
Devlis leaned back, eyes unfocusing and retreating into the past.
When the dwarves of Kor-Ataka Tnak and the men from Echo Hold did not come to the Alliance at Emerald Lake, some of us returned to learn their fate. Deep in the holds of the far-reach mountains we sought them out and found a few alive with their young ones. Gamadron, the abomination of snakes Jen used on the Shroud Lake Shard, had slaughtered nearly the entire race of dwarves. Kihol shattered soon after, and we found ourselves here in this dwarf cave. The dwarves carved and ensorcelled these trees in gratitude for us seeking them out. Only 14 of that race remain, and they are old and near death. Many elves have passed on, throwing themselves into the swirling nothingness where the shards sail. We have only managed one child in our time here, Falael, my son. We have grown forlorn and cold in this place, so you must forgive our severity.
Unification will come soon, Mirel said, and you can walk forests of wood again.
Yes, yes, it is true. But we shall leave much sooner, so we don't have to tunnel our way out.
Through a portal? She asked.
No. The same way you will in 4 weeks.
What way is that?
By jumping.